This is Scan, and I'm Hal Dragset. We've always assumed that oil is our most precious liquid, but in many parts of the world, and increasingly in this country, clean water is becoming more scarce. Access to clean water will become a more critical issue to us than was access to oil. Calvin Alexander is a geologist.
Talk to the people who used to be farmers around Lubbock, Texas, who don't farm anymore because the water isn't there. They pumped it all out of the ground. Talk to the people in Arizona, where they've pumped down the water table 300-400 feet in some cases. Talk to people around Denver, where they've now got polluted water from various industrial processes. Water is distinctly different from land or oil or copper or lead or zinc or something like that, in that it is part of a big cycle, and it is not used up. I mean, there is just as much water now as there was 10 years ago, as there was 100 years ago. It's just part of a cycle, and it gets recycled naturally. And, you know, water falls from the sky, it drains into the ground, it flows down the rivers, it goes to the ocean, it evaporates, it comes up as clouds. And this whole process is an enormous cycle, which can be used over and over and over again. It's a cycle that's fundamentally driven by the sun. So it's based on renewable energy. It can be used over and over again. It has been used over and over again. A friend of mine in the Freshwater Biology Institute likes to use the example that in your glass of water, there's almost certainly a molecule of water that was in Cleopatra's bathtub. And the problem is that mankind is inadvertently intervening in this, in these cycles, without realizing what they're doing. Now, that doesn't mean that man should stop intervening in the cycles at all. It means that the species has to understand even better how those cycles work and how that they can be used for the benefit of mankind. One of the problems is that the underground water supplies that a lot of people depend on for domestic and industrial water are magic somehow. They don't come from anywhere, that the water doesn't go anyplace. It's just there, and there's an infinite amount of it, and you can use it, you can abuse it, do whatever you want to with it. And that idea is just categorically wrong. It is taught in hydrology courses, it's taught in engineering courses, that the ground will clean up just about anything that you put on, that you can pour all sorts of pollution, all sorts of contaminants into the ground, and the ground will somehow magically clean it up. And that has an enormous element of truth in it. The groundwater system is a system that involves a biological system that does clean it by a number of ways. The major portions of that, or a major portion, the groundwater portion, is a filtration mechanism that involves, to a large extent, biological organisms. There is a kind of life form, a bacteria or something, that removes phosphorus, that removes nitrates, that removes all of the other sorts of materials. And that's a true statement. It really does work. But it can break down in two very important fashions. One of the ways it can break down is you can put new artificial chemical species into the waste stream that there simply isn't a bacteria or some kind of living organism that will remove. DDT, 2,4-D, herbicides and pesticides and so forth, which are new chemicals that simply don't have a biological pathway to be removed, and so those simply pass right through the system because there's nothing there to eat them. The second way the system can break down is you can take one of the materials that does have a biological pathway to remove it and to cleanse it, and you can overload that biological pathway. If, for example, a given area of the ground is capable of removing 100 units of phosphorus, and you put 50 units of phosphorus on that area, it will work just fine. If you put 99 units, it will work just fine. If you put 102 units on it, you have completely overloaded the system, and what the system will do is just quit. You won't remove 100 units and have 2 units left over. It won't remove anything. And so these have the property that there's a threshold, and you can load it up to that threshold, and once you exceed the threshold, the whole system just shuts down. We often don't know where that threshold is without inadvertently passing it, at which point it's too late to do anything about it. Some of these are very stable chemicals. Some of them have properties such that they bioaccumulate up a food chain, that they get into the living organisms, and they just get more and more concentrated as they go up the food chains, and the human beings sit at the top of a lot of these food chains. This is a particularly scary kind, because what happens is this whole food chain is serving as a filter to remove this pollutant from the environment and to concentrate it in the organism that's at the top of that food chain, you and I in many cases. And the other problem is the fact that there's simply more and more people producing more and more normal kinds of waste that there are biological pathways to remove, and that we're in many cases simply overloading those biological pathways. And once that happens, the river, the lake, the underground stream, the underground aquifer just literally dies. You hear statements that there are fish in the rivers now, but you can't eat them. Well, I mean, you can eat them if you're inclined to lose your hair and have funny looking kids. I have been involved in a groundwater pollution problem that involved the disposal of some industrial waste in a landfill. And we have eventually convinced the regulatory agencies and the individuals concerned that indeed this industrial waste was contaminating the groundwater. The company went back and discovered that by making an absolutely trivial change in their industrial process that did not involve buying new equipment, it did not involve hiring more people, it was just an incredibly trivial change. The quality of their product went up. They did not generate the waste product anymore. They therefore did not have to buy the industrial solvent that was becoming the waste product. The generation of that waste simply stopped. The company saved money. No one lost their job, except perhaps three or four steps down the line at the chemical company that was making the solvent. And the company itself is now saving money. Unfortunately, it's going to take them a long time to save enough money to pay for the cost of the cleanup. And that's what you normally find. It is much more economical to not generate the waste in the first place than it is to try to cope with the waste once it's generated. The economics argument is very, very complicated, but there's a false kind of economics going on, because they don't count the cost of the water pollution that's associated with it. The water is free, and the pollution of the water doesn't cost anything, and that's just wrong. And I'm convinced that if you build that cost into it, and somebody is going to pay for it sometime, and if you build that in, then you discover that you will have more people working more productively, turning out a better product, and not screwing up the groundwater supply in the process. People try to make it to be a trade-off. You can either have jobs or you can have the environment, and that's nonsense. Those people who are doing the jobs live in that environment, and if those jobs are designed right, and they're protecting the environment, and there will probably be more jobs in the process, and there will probably be more money made in the process, and the whole system will work much better.
Water, a liquid more precious than oil. Clean, drinkable water will be an increasingly scarce commodity for us, as it has been in the world. Our stewardship of water will be critical for future generations.
It's grim, and it's getting worse. The availability of drinkable water is the life-limiting case in large parts of the world. And we are taking that available fresh water in many cases, and we're using it as a sewer. We're dumping all kinds of waste material into it. The amount of water that is available is going down. The rate at which we're using it is going up, and the rate at which we are contaminating it is going up. People don't think about water up until the minute that they turn the tap and something doesn't come out, or something does come out but you can't drink it. And then all of a sudden they worry about it, and that's often 10 years or 20 years or 30 years too late to worry about it.
Geologist Calvin Alexander is concerned about the human intervention in nature's cyclical processes in relation to water.
Somehow, when someone starts talking about this sort of a concept, you get the idea that you're talking about doing nothing. We are talking about using the hydrologic cycle to the benefit of the human race in a rational fashion, rather than inadvertently messing up the cycle. You can alter that cycle. You can modify it to the human race's benefits. It's just that oftentimes people have an exceedingly foolish definition of what their benefit is. A very short-sighted, a very parochial, a very local view of what this is. But once you start intervening in this cycle, the massive water projects and so forth that you do mean that you have got to have even more detailed knowledge of how the cycle works. You've got to understand it thoroughly, and you've got to realize what you can productively do and what you can't productively do, because there is a physical reality. And if you ignore that physical reality, the dam's going to break, the lake's going to go dry, the water's going to get contaminated. You're going to turn a spigot one day and nothing's going to come out. I think it's important to emphasize the fact that we really don't have an option of going back. And so it's going to take the best of science, the best of environmentalism, the best of law, the best of morals, the best of all of it to make it a world that's has a lower level of risk than the current world does. And at that level, I'm an optimist. I think we will tackle these things. It just may be painful in the process.
You've been listening to a remix version of SCAN, an electronic sweep of the horizon discovering God's activity in the world. We featured Calvin Alexander on the scarce and precious resource of clean water. SCAN is a production of Select Learning, a continuing education program of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.